everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 207, where we are discussing Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 5, episode 17, Forever, and Angel season 2, episode 17, Disharmony. My name is Caitlin, and I am joined by fellow superfan Mai and newbies Brittany and Kristen. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
So before we jump into our discussion, just a reminder of how you can get in touch with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypoblog.com. Or you can hit Mai up at Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Mai's been doing a good job with the Tumblr. I've been following, and there are actual gift sets showing up, and it's very exciting.
Thank you.
All right, so as usual, we're going to start the episode with fun facts so you can get used to our voices before we start yammering away. Kristen, let's start with you. What's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that at WonderCon this weekend, there have been pictures taken of the 100 Pops out in the wild. So the 100 Funkos, they exist. And they are being sold. And so now I have to start hunting them down one by one. But it's just really exciting because they kept talking about them and never really said when they were going to be released and when we were going to see them. And a couple of people found them on the show floor at WonderCon and started taking pictures. So now my hunt begins.
I'm still not over my rage quit of that show. I'm still very sad about it.
It's okay. I understand.
Brittany, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that I've seen this episode of Buffy before, years and years ago. It was on TV, and I was like, oh, Buffy, I've never seen this. Let's leave it on for a while. And then I watched Spike go and beat up a weird monster thing, and I was like, yep, definitely not the show for me. And I changed the channel. So when it came up again, I'm like, this seems oddly familiar. And then as soon as I saw Spike and Dawn like descend to get the eggs, I'm like, I have seen this before, and I remember it so vividly. I was like, wow, this is like, it was so weird because I forgot that I'd ever like stopped and watched it. It must have been at least 3 or 4 years ago that I was just flipping through the TV and an episode of Buffy was on, and I'm like, you know, never gave this show a shot. You know, let's just take a look. And I saw like Spike hacking and like that animal up and Gorn thing. And I'm like, ah, no, this definitely not a show I'll ever invest my time in. And here we are.
And now you are invested. All right. And Mai, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that I binged 13 Reasons Why last night and I cried so much. It's a hard show to watch, but it's really, really, really good. It's on Netflix.
I enjoyed the book. Need to watch the show.
I had to stop after episode 7. Well, not stop, but take a break. Because I was like, okay, this is really heavy and I need to not be watching this anymore. So I watched 4 episodes of 30 Rock just to boost morale. And it was great because where I am, apparently where I left off in 30 Rock on Netflix was when they do the Kelsey Grammer song. So I was very excited about that.
And I still have Buffy on Netflix.
Rude. Yeah, we don't need to talk about that.
Yeah. In addition to them taking Buffy and Angel, they took the first 4 seasons of Bones. Just the first 4. You can still watch 5 through 12. I'm like, what the hell, guys? So Netflix is on my shit list currently.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
They probably signed a contract for like blocks of the seasons at a time, I would guess.
Yeah, it's just really annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the Fox contracts must be up, though, because Bob's Burgers is also gone at like the couple seasons, and I was very upset about that as well.
Yeah.
Good job, Fox. Way to mess it up.
You're ruining everything.
All right. And my fun fact is that it is the most wonderful time of the year. Baseball is back. Oh, I am so happy baseball is back. My life is complete when baseball is back. For as much as I talked about football, baseball is my number one sport.
And it is a gorgeous stadium. I saw pictures of it.
Oh, isn't it nice? I'm so excited to go see the new Braves Stadium.
It was all over our news because the Yankees were playing the first game there.
I'm very excited. Obviously, I'm from Atlanta, so I'm a Braves fan, and we're actually not going to be that good this year because we're rebuilding. but we're going to be a lot better than we were the last couple years. And we're opening a new ballpark that I'm very excited to see, except it's going to be hard to get to because part of our freeway collapsed on Friday. So traffic in Atlanta that is already horrific is now going to be even worse because I-85 is a massive freeway and a section of it collapsed because some idiot who was smoking crack set a fire underneath it. And now both the north and southbound sections of it have to be replaced. And that's going to take who knows how long. So
thanks
don't
to
do drugs, kids.
Is that seriously what happened?
Yeah, yeah. They arrested the guy and they said like he was with two other people and he was smoking crack and set a fire to stuff they were storing under the freeway.
Thanks to the CW like setting up camp in Atlanta, I actually knew about this like as it was happening because a couple of the writers from the originals were like, and Godspeed to everyone I know in Atlanta. I hope everybody's okay and isn't involved. And then it was just this picture of the freeway burning and I'm like, what the hell? So that I can't even imagine. I'm sure that's hell right now.
Luckily, I live north of that, so it doesn't specifically affect me, but it's just going to make, like, the baseball season starting is now going to, like, complicate travel and traffic flow and everything. So perfect time for half of this, the biggest freeway, in like one of the biggest freeways in the southeast to just break. So good times. And speaking of good times, let's move on to Buffy, which was just a joy fest. It wasn't quite the body, but it was a joy fest. Just kidding. So our synopsis for Forever reads, in this episode, Dawn tries to resurrect Joyce, and it's horrible and awful. As if we wanted to prolong the pain and suffering by any more, Willow accidentally gives Dawn the means to start a resurrection process. Spike helps out the Niblet by fighting a dragon and leading her to a creepy senile wizard, but Dawn rips the picture tying Joyce back to this world before Buffy can open the door to see Mommy again. And I don't know that Willow did it accidentally. That seemed pretty purposeful.
Yeah, I don't think it was an accident.
Accidentally on purpose.
Yeah. Accidentally in quotes.
Yeah, quote unquote, when she used her magic to pull out the book so Dawn could do it.
But did she know it was a how-to guide?
I would hope she knew what was in the book she was pulling out.
Good point.
All right. First point, Buffy is kind of in the mode of that a lot of people use to grieve, where they just have to deal with like all the funeral arrangements. We open with her picking a casket, which is just horribly sad. So she's just focused on work. And Dawn, not dealing well. A, with her mom dying, because who would be? And B, with the fact that Buffy is just sort of focused on getting the arrangements made for the funeral. And we find out their dad hasn't even called. So, you know, A plus father of the year there. He's just been a worst father ever through his complete lack of presence through this whole show. So good job, Papa Summers.
I'm surprised they even keep bringing him up. I feel like they could have easily, with this whole key thing, just kind of gotten rid of him, like rewrote his story in a way where he wouldn't be such a horrible person. Like, I mean, I know he's horrible and we're supposed to hate him and all this stuff, but I feel like it's making more work for the show to keep reminding us that he is a thing than to have just sort of rewritten like, oh, he left and like he's gone forever now. We don't have to worry about him. Like, they could have left the family when both girls were really young, but instead we have to deal with horrible deadbeat dad living up his dream in Spain or wherever he is.
With his secretary.
With his secretary.
But it does make Giles seem the better man.
Oh, yeah, but he was the better man even when dear old dad did show up and take Buffy to ice skating or whatever they did. I don't remember what the exact activity was, but yeah. They already successfully did that. So if they just wrote him off, I don't think we needed like the bad contrast to make Giles seem good. Because, come on, of course Giles is good.
I feel like it's a natural thing for them to just like, what about the guy she was married to and had children with? And if they don't want to cast anyone for that, just, he's still a deadbeat dad.
Yeah, I also guess it's, it's not 2017 when this show is happening, so it probably would have been harder to get in touch with someone who was, you know, really far away. But still, I'm sure they could have figured something out.
They have a dad. His name is Giles.
Very true. Yeah, Giles is really picking up the slack and helping Buffy with arrangements, answering phone calls and everything, paperwork. So, A-plus support system in the form of Giles. Lots of Giles love. We also see Willow and Xander are feeling sad. Willow is going to see her mother a lot more, who we know tried to burn her at the stake back several seasons ago. And Xander's like, yeah, I want to go visit your mom too, because my family is still horrible. So he's not particularly feeling seeing his own family, despite all this. But this brings us to Spike. Let's just talk about Spike for a second. He brings flowers, and Xander makes the assumption that it is for Buffy and to get in her pants. And he says it's for Joyce, because Joyce was the only decent one of them. And as we know, they were friends. They like to watch Passions together. So Spike really liked Joyce. He brought flowers. Xander drives him off. And then when he leaves the flowers, Willow discovers there was no card. So it was a genuine sentiment. He just wanted to bring flowers for Joyce. And I just want to say, aw.
And he probably picked them himself.
Yeah, they did look handpicked. Or maybe he stole them off of somebody's grave at the cemetery.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Nah. Like, he probably took them from the cemetery.
People would leave better flowers than what he showed up with.
I just figured he picked them from someone's yard. Like, yeah, these work. I mean, like, I'm sure the intent was there, but I also don't think he bought them from someone either.
Yeah, he didn't buy them and they didn't steal them, but he tried.
He picked them somewhere.
Yeah.
So how do we feel about Spike paying homage to Joyce?
I honestly didn't think about his reaction to all of this until all of a sudden he comes stomping around the corner and I'm like, that's right, him and Joyce were kind of friends. Like, she invited him in and they were chatting, you know, the episode that Buffy kind of walks in the kitchen and sees him and is like, what the hell is happening? Like, I kind of forget that Spike and Joyce kind of had their own friendship. So I felt really bad for Spike. I have a little soft spot for him.
Just like Joyce did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, for the past couple weeks, we've been like, oh my God, Spike, you need to calm down. And I guess I would have had the same reaction as Xander and Willow when they first see him approaching the house and, you know, they're trying to protect their friend. But also, Spike, despite all of his shortcomings, he was close as he could have been with Joyce, and he wouldn't have wished any harm on anyone in Buffy's family, I don't think. So, except Angel and her friends. But, you know, he did like Joyce, so yeah, it was cute for once and not creepy, which is a nice change of pace.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't blame them for assuming that's what he was doing, mm-hmm. But once you realize what the sentiment actually was, like, yeah, of course Spike liked Joyce. That makes total sense. And Spike is pretty much barred from any of the mutual mourning going on.
Yeah.
You know, he's not welcome there. The funeral is during the day. So it's really all he can do is, like, anonymously leave some flowers for her. But it was nice that he made the gesture. So actual nice moment for Spike, which is a big, big change from lately.
Yeah.
We have Joyce's funeral. Any brief thoughts just on the funeral itself?
I thought it was interesting that she was, like, anti-wake. You know, not that it has any real significance or anything to me. It just was like, wow, okay, she hated wakes. Like, as they had that conversation, like, about it right before the funeral, it just one of those things that, it, you know, you don't really think about it as something that the person who died has a specific, like, thought about. Like, usually the wake is a celebration of some sort or whatever, but I thought it was interesting that they kind of threw that in there so that to eliminate this awkward party thing that always happens, you know, and all of that. Just an interesting thing to kind of talk about.
Yeah, I liked that whole idea, though, of not having the Wake and everyone sort of being on the side of whatever Buffy would want to do, and also trying to make accommodations for Dawn. So when Dawn finally speaks up and is like, I want to stay at Willow's house, like, I don't want to come back here, everyone was like, okay, like, we'll do whatever everyone thinks they need to do, and we'll make accommodations for whatever is necessary. And then as for the actual funeral, I thought it was nice, but I think, like, someone probably should have stayed with Buffy. I know Willow, she told Willow to go, and they needed to go because they had Dawn with them, but I feel like maybe they knew that Angel would come because they sort of just left her there, and I don't think I would have left her there by herself. Like, I would have sat in my car or something. So I did feel a little weird about that, but then when Angel showed up, I was like, oh, well, this makes sense.
Yeah, I'd imagine someone called Angel to let him know, and so that, like, it was Giles or Willow or someone, and so they knew he was on his way. Who knows? I would imagine Willow wouldn't have just left Buffy there if she really thought she'd be by herself the whole time.
Mm-hmm. I can picture Giles sitting in the parking lot.
Yeah, like, just chilling in his car with the book.
Watching.
Watching, yes, literal watching.
Ha ha ha.
Nice.
Just making sure she's okay, and then Angel comes, and he's like, okay, I'm good, I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm. Don't need to see this.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Angel comes, and he's there once the sun goes down, and I really love the moment when he comes and says, sorry you couldn't come sooner, and she just silently takes his hand. Like, she doesn't even look at him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really sweet moment. And he stays with her. They sit under a tree in the cemetery, basically, until dawn. Just Buffy sort of expressing how she's feeling, and Angel just being there to be comforting. And it's lovely and sweet, and y'all know that's my ship. So when I saw that this was my episode, I was like, oh, it's the Angel one, yes. So I was happy. And we know from watching Angel that he has just come off his very own dark moments, but you'd never be able to tell from where he is in Buffy.
Yeah, but this is a weird moment because you're watching, I mean, the watching order that we're doing it, I'm like, this? I don't think Angel's really calmed down enough to go take care of this and then, like, show up for work the next day, like, in the episode that we saw. But someone also pointed out in the group to, like, the super fans, I mean, not in the group, on Twitter, to the super fans that, like, oh, this is one of those episodes where a weird watching order makes a lot more sense than it would if we watched it Buffy Angel, Buffy Angel. And I think that that's kind of true. I think maybe this episode should have taken place after we watched the, like, last week's Angel and this week's Angel. I think it just makes more sense. Like, even the phone call between Willow and Cordelia in the Angel episode would have made a little bit more sense. So, weird order. Right? These shows are odd.
It happens sometimes. They can't entirely account for everything that's going on in each other's shows. So we have to do the mental gymnastics to get there, I guess.
He had an epiphany.
Yes.
One of many.
He keeps saying that, but nobody believes him. Buffy and Angel have the night. They stay together, and it's clear that they're very much still in love and realize it's a bad idea for Angel to offers to stay for a while. And they realize it's a bad idea because, you know, sex. And unlike with Darla, sex with Buffy will be bad. So Angel leaves after that. But did you guys expect to see Angel in this? Was it a surprise for the newbies that he popped up?
I feel like I should have expected it. Like, it's the logical thing that, yes, this guy who cares quite a bit about Buffy would, of course, show up to be there for her. But it didn't occur to me to expect it until all of a sudden this person appears behind her, and I'm like, of course it's Angel. I'm an idiot. So I'm really glad that they included him in this and that he got to be there for her and that they had their own time to kind of help her grieve and help her move forward from the chaos that happened, you know, finding her mother and all of that. Like, I'm glad that they had a moment, because I feel like Buffy, she had a minute to kind of just be Buffy and be a girl and not have to worry about her sister and everyone else. Like, she got to just be with Angel and breathe for a second, and then get back to life and try and figure out where things go.
Yeah, I also agree with Kristen. I should have expected him to be coming back, and I wasn't surprised when he did. But I think that if he didn't come back, I would have been so furious at him that I wouldn't have been able to watch Angel anymore, because that would have been a horrible, horrible move. So it had to happen. They had to bring him back. Otherwise, it would have just ruined all of the work that we've been doing on Angel's character in the show, Angel.
Strong words.
I'm mad at him in an alternate universe if he didn't show up, but he did, so everything's fine. We're still on good terms.
Mai, you want to bring up what you added to the doc?
While I'm on the doing the Tumblr thing, I saw a gift set that points out that Angel's words to Buffy about being strong mirrors what she said to him in amends when he was all tormented and sunicidal, me being punny. And I thought you'd appreciate that, being the biggest shipper.
I like it. I like it a lot. I like parallels.
Yeah, put it in for you.
Appreciate it. I like my parallels and I like my ship.
I kind of picture you watching them with heart eyes.
Not going to lie, a little bit true. I guess for me, what, you know, this whole scene with Angel shows is just the deep affection that they have for each other, that, you know, they didn't recently part on particularly great terms, because I think the last time they saw each other was with the Faith stuff. So, like, it...
When he came back and met Riley, wasn't it?
Wasn't the Faith stuff after that? Or no, that was right after, yeah, but... That's right.
I don't like him.
Right. So, but it just, time and distance and everything, for everything that they both have going on in their lives, it shows, like, that deep affection and deep love is still there, and that it's far beyond just, like, a physical thing for the two of them. Like, it's a very deep thing that they have.
It doesn't go away over time.
Mm-hmm. It's very strong. And I feel like kind of no matter who goes in and out of their lives, like, it's always going to be Buffy, or it's always going to be Angel. Like, they can have all these other people, but it always comes back to this other person. And I feel like it just shows the depth of the love that they have for each other. So I enjoy it, but that surprises nobody. And then we have kind of the main thing that happens in this episode is Dawn. Dawn is having a hard time dealing, which any 14-year-old who suddenly loses their mother would, I'm sure, be having a hard time. And she realizes that she wants to do a resurrection spell and bring her mother back. And both Willow and Tara are against it, though Tara is like, you can't do that. It goes against, you know, the laws of nature. Witches aren't supposed to do that. Meanwhile, Willow is like, I don't even know that it would work. Like, she's thinking more like the logistical aspects. And Tara's like, hey, not the point. The point is that it goes against, you know, the laws of nature, that we should not do this. So resurrection bad. Though we have seen a zombie. Remember the Zeppo? Xander was hanging out with a zombie. So I don't know if...
And zombies on Angel.
And the guy in the Zeppo, like, very much had his personality. So I don't know what technique was used to bring him back. Or if that they just decided to do zombie for funny effect. And then we're trying to be more serious here. That's probably more the truth. But Willow, after all of this, she kind of leaves a book out, basically, for Dawn. And Dawn uses this and starts the process of doing a resurrection spell. So how did you guys feel about Dawn getting so intent on resurrecting Joyce through magic?
I mean, the way we've seen Dawn lately, I was able to kind of forget that she's a teenager, but the teenager came out in full effect this episode, and as it would, you know, when you're going through this, something this stressful and this, like, just emotional, but, like, just seeing her unable to deal and just, no, like, this is how I'm gonna fix this. Like, I can fix it. I know I can. I was reminded that Dawn is not, she's not one of the Scooby gang from the beginning. Like, she is a younger girl. She's not the same age as the rest of our protagonists, even if she does kind of just slide into the group sometimes. So, you know, you just kind of saw that someone at her age, when with how sudden this was, and she didn't, you know, she wasn't there. She didn't go through what Buffy went through in those moments. So it must feel a little bit surreal to just have your mother gone. Like, now, just out of nowhere, she's gone. And I can imagine that if magic, you know, was sitting next to you and, you know, you knew that someone had the ability to, it'd be hard to be like, yeah, I know we shouldn't, but, you know, my mom was taken from me and I want to see her one more time, or I want to, you know, I want her back.
Yeah, and she is now thrown into, like, watching these people do magic, and they know that the resources are there, and she knows that it's a possibility. She may not be fully aware of what she's getting herself into, but she sees it as an option, and it's something that she can act on. So it's a way for her to take action without having to wait for anyone else. She can, even though Tara and Willow are like, no, you can't do this, like, it's again, it goes against whatever, she feels like she has enough resources and to make her a move herself, where this is something that even though people are telling her no, it's not prohibiting her from doing anything. So it made a lot of sense that she would want to do this. And I was actually quite shocked by how easily it worked that she was able to pull it off, because I think that that was, like, a good indicator of what Dawn is capable of when she sets her mind to something, and, like, they're underestimating her. And this is a good way to show that they are underestimating her for the rest of the series, at least.
That's a good point. I like that. I have to, yeah, like, the ease with which she seems to do it, I mean, ease of getting that egg, quote unquote easy, because she had a spike with her. But yeah, she was able to pull the spell off that's supposed to be ridiculously dangerous and hard to do, and she does it. But I wonder if that's, like, there's the, what Brittany is saying, that, you know, she's has this potential, but I also wonder if there's something to, like, the spell itself maybe isn't actually super hard. It's everything else that goes along with it. Like, we don't know what it brought back. We only ever saw, like, the shuffling feet of the zombie Joyce, so we didn't see, like, specifically what came back. That always haunts me when I think about this episode, like, what would have been there?
Like, I'm glad it didn't actually happen.
Me too.
I was still watching, RIP Netflix, I was still watching this on Netflix, and so I paused it as the mother, like, as you see the shadow, and I was like, there's, like, 35 seconds left, how are we going to deal with this? I'm like, oh, it's going to be a two-parter, this is ridiculous, I'm going to have to deal with this now, and I don't want to see zombie Joyce, I think it's too soon. And then when she ripped the picture, I was like, oh, actually, I complained about nothing because the episode ended.
It's like, I approve of this. Nice job, Dawn.
Yeah.
It seems like Dawn goes through a lot of, like, multiple steps of the grieving process through this whole thing. Like, I think one of the writers was saying, like, the whole point of Dawn doing this was she was in the bargaining stage of grief, and that, you know, if you live in a town where magic exists and you're in the bargaining stage of grief, of course you would try to use magic to do resurrection. And, like, there's the anger in her conversation with Buffy when they're both finally getting things out. And then it seems almost kind of like acceptance when she rips the picture. So it seems like she goes through multiple steps, like, just through this whole process, which I thought was interesting. But I was proud of her when she ripped the picture.
I also thought it was really interesting how she saw Buffy's grieving. Like, she seemed to think that Buffy was like, okay, let's just keep going. Let's get this done. Let's get this over with. Like, time to move on. Like, the way she interpreted Buffy's actions and how she was handling things was so far from what we've seen Buffy actually going through that it was like, wait, where have you been? Like, what have you been looking at? But again, it's a little sister looking at, you know, this. It's a different point of view. And so you kind of do end up seeing Dawn's way. You're like, oh, my God, like, I can see why she would think all of that. But I felt so bad for her, and I felt bad for Buffy, who's just, like, trying to, you know, hold things together and is worrying about everything. It just, yeah, it was a really, that scene with them was a really good moment to see both sisters kind of put everything out there and then mend fences all in the same, on the same, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, and it finally felt like Dawn realized that she could take care of Buffy in that moment, sort of, like, echoing on what Kristen was saying, like, that... Again, it was another moment where she felt like she had some agency and was able to take some action to make it better. And she did that by protecting Buffy from what could have been something disastrous and something that would have set back any healing that they have already done, which probably wasn't a lot, but just something to keep in mind.
I'm always struck by when Buffy slaps Dawn. She's so offended at the way
cleaning
Dawn
up
is,
mom's mess.
Yeah, like the way she says that, like she's so offended by it, and then that's when she breaks down when she realizes what she's done, and she explains the way she's grieving basically. And when she starts crying after she is saying like this is why she's so busy all the time, like. I'm just reminded how young she is. Like, I think sometimes we forget, but this would technically be, like, it's supposed to be her sophomore year of college. Like, she's very young.
Mm-hmm.
And she, for all intents and purposes, just became an orphan because their father's completely out of the picture, and which means it's her responsibility to care for a 14-year-old girl, plus you've got the whole key thing going on. It just struck me watching that, like, my God, she's so young. And she has all of this, like, we already knew she had the weight of the world on her shoulders because of the Slayer thing, but then the weight of, like, the life of just her sister and just in a very human respect, the weight of being the adult in the family, and she's barely an adult. Like, it was very powerful to me, but it made me very sad for her.
In the past 2 weeks, even though we had like some of little bits of glory here and there, it was like you just forget about it. Like, you kind of forget that the whole Slayer thing exists, because even when she says to Angel, like, you know, I'm afraid of tomorrow, because after the funeral and all that, all the planning's done. It's the first normal day that she'll have, but she kind of, like, doesn't even know what that is anymore. She's in, like, this weird space of, well, do I just go back and start training? Or do I, like, what do I do? Do I start going through things at the house? Like, what is this new normal that I need to adjust to? And we still haven't really figured that out yet.
You know, when she said that, I didn't even think about the Slayer of it all. Like, I really thought she was just talking, like, being in that house and taking care of Dawn and how am I going to do all of that? Like, and be a student. And if you add Slayer on top of all of that, it's like, wow, she does have, especially now, has, you know, even more on her plate. Like, that I can't imagine having to take, like, I have younger siblings, and I can't imagine all of a sudden, even now being, you know, 30 years old, having to make sure that they're, you know, taken care of, and they're a little older than Dawn was, but still, like, it would be really crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of responsibility that she's been thrust into on top of the responsibility she already had, and as she says to Angel, like, everyone is expecting me to know how to deal with it. Or she feels like everyone is expecting her. Like, as Dawn tells her, like, that's not true. Like, Dawn is basically waiting for her to ask for help and show some cracks. And her friends, I think, are waiting for that too. And she's just like, they need me to be strong. And so she has this perception of needing to be strong. Because of being the Slayer, she's kind of the de facto leader of that group. And it's like she doesn't know how to hand things over to to anyone, basically. Like, she's done it with a little bit with Giles, but for the most part, she feels like she has to have this on her shoulders. But even though her friends and her loved ones are saying, you know, you don't have to do this by yourself, she feels like she has to. And that's a very heavy weight to bear. So it was very, I think it was very cathartic at the very end when she and Dawn like collapse in each other's arms crying. Like, it's like she's kind of allowed some of that to go. Like, she can openly grieve and let some of that emotional stress, like, let someone help her with that. So that seemed, in a way, healthy for her to do.
Yeah, and that final moment, I feel like we've been building to that for 2 weeks. Like, neither one of them have really been able to completely fall apart. Dawn has here and there, but it's mostly been, you know, in moments of convenience, and this really isn't a moment of convenience. Like, they don't even close the door. It's just, like, too much to even do something, like, to get to a point where, you know, it's not like they're sitting on the couch having tea and then doing, like, falling apart. It just happens. So I think it was a good moment. I felt relief watching it happen. So I was like, finally, like, I feel like they're, you know, they're moving, and not that they're moving on, but they're at least moving I feel like they were just hanging in limbo for so long.
Agreed. All right. So some odds and ends of, like, Spike is the one who helps Dawn get the egg and, like, get the key ingredients she needs. They visit a guy named Doc, who is some type of reptile demon and is kind of creepy. What do you guys think of him?
Kind of creepy.
Yeah. I mean, that's would sum pretty it up. Much.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's Joel Grey. So I couldn't. I think that is the thing that triggered the fact that I had seen this episode before, was because I was like, oh my God, Joel Grey is in Buffy. And I didn't know how big of a role he played, but I think this is really the only role that he plays. But Joel Grey is a big guy in Broadway, and he plays the first in the movie Cabaret. He plays, like, the guy who sings, like, Welcoming. He's the, oh my God, I forget what they call him.
Master of Ceremonies?
Yes, Master of Ceremonies. And he's just awesome. Joel Grey's career is so cool. If you like Broadway, you should really check him out. He's amazing.
Oh, he's the wizard in Wicked.
Yes. He was the wizard in Wicked. He's great, and that's just, I saw him and I was like, oh, it's Joel Grey. That whole scene I thought was really funny, where, like, Dawn tries to pay him and Spike's, like, not really taking the charge at all. He's just sort of, like, making the introduction, and then he's like lighting the cigarette when, like, Dawn sees that he has a tail. And she's kind of thrown in on her own, but she has that backup there if he's needed. And then he decides to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to, like, get the eggs, which I thought was interesting. And I think Spike just needed that. Like, she was like, Spike, come on, like, we can go. I think he needed that outlet, though, to get his frustration out. So it's like, it was really good for him to go and beat something up that wasn't a dummy of Buffy and just, like, get some, like, adrenaline flowing through his lifeless body, because, man, he needed to release some angst, and I felt like he got some of it out. Plus, he had the knowledge of doing something good, and I enjoyed the fact that he was like, yeah, and by the way, don't tell Buffy.
Yeah, I had visions of Buffy finding out about this, like, you know, 4 episodes down the road or something, and him, like, just looking at her and going, she was going to do it anyway. At least I kept her alive. Like, if she walked into that den by herself, Dawn would have been in big trouble. But, you know, thanks to Handy Spike being along for the ride, you know, Dawn manages to see another day. So, you know, while it's like, Spike, why are you supporting her on this? I also kind of saw it his way, too. Like, I don't think she would have just given it up if he said, no, I'm not helping you. And at least this way, she had someone there to protect her and to be there for her as she was trying to figure all this stuff out. So, good for Spike, in my opinion.
So we continue the pattern of Spike and Dawn doing dangerous things together. They're like a club. I like or something.
Thrill seekers, yeah.
Yeah. So any final thoughts on this episode?
Ben?
Oh, Ben, that's right. I was going to come back to him and forgot. So Ben runs into Jinx.
Jinxie.
Yeah. And accidentally implies that the key is human. And when he realizes what he did, he stabs Jinx, but it stupidly doesn't make sure he's dead. So yeah, Jinx seriously. Gets back to Glory and tells her that the key is human. So now Glory knows the key is human.
Stupid Ben.
Just one more reason to hate Frank. Because every time I look at Ben, I see Frank. So it's just...
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Who's Frank?
He's How to Get Away with Murder. He's like Annalise's like right-hand man for the first
Oh my God, is that Frank?
That's Frank.
Oh, I'm so used to Frank with like a beard and being a little heavier. And like when Frank like shaved, when Frank shaved this season, I was so thrown off. I was like, I can't watch this. It's so freaky. But oh my God, now I can't unsee it. No. It's How I Met Your Mother glass shattering moment.
Right? It's that's a bigger reveal. Every time he does something dumb, I just want to be like, God, Frank.
That's a bigger reveal than him and Harmony being the same person.
Harmony?
we're not there yet. I'm sorry. Glory. Him and Glory. Too many blondes on this series.
With these names, like Glory, Harmony, Willow. What is happening?
All right, so is Glory much closer to finding Dawn now, do you think, newbies?
Well, she's definitely closer, because going from, you know, the key could be anything to the key is human, she's definitely closer. If she starts to employ, like, how did Ben figure this out? Clearly it's someone he met at the hospital. Like, she can get there closer if she really thinks about it. But I don't think she's super close, but definitely is making progress.
Yeah, the area that she's looking is much narrower now. Because she's going to find the people who are around Buffy.
Dun, dun, dun. All right, let's move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines. My favorite scene was obviously Buffy and Angel, and I already talked about why I liked it earlier, so we'll go ahead and move on to mine.
And mine is Giles drinking and listening to music all alone, because he's listening to the same song that he and Joyce listened to in Bad Candy when they were eating all the bad candy. And did the nasty.
Quality throwback.
Yeah. I think he probably loved her a little bit more than he let on.
Aww. Brittany, Sad your favorite scene?
Mine was Spike helping Dawn get the egg, because for the reasons I already said. A, because it was the only episode of Buffy I've ever seen before starting this podcast. And B, because I think Spike needed that little mission to help him, you know, cope with some of the stuff that's going on inside of him that he doesn't quite understand in a healthy way, not stalking Buffy way.
All right, and Kristen.
And mine was basically the whole last final scene between Dawn and Buffy and them kind of putting a stop to the resurrection spell before Buffy actually had to see her mother, you know, in the flesh of some sort. It just felt really, like, honest. For 2 seconds, they both said what they needed to say and got it all off their chests, and Buffy slapped her sister, which, you know, I'm a sister. I can admit to having smacked my brother a time or two, and then being like, I shouldn't have done that, and you can see that, like, run through her head, like, oh my God, like, I'm not saying she didn't necessarily need that because of what she said, but I should not have done that. And it was just a really honest sibling moment, especially in this crazy emotional time for them. And I just thought it was a really, really good scene.
And let's move on to favorite lines. Mine is from my favorite scene, and it should surprise nobody. It's when Angel says, I can stay in town as long as you want me. And Buffy says, how's forever? Does forever work for you? And I just melted.
Oh,
I melted.
I don't ship them, but it kind of melted me too.
I really do love them. Like, I don't know if I ship anyone on the show really, but I love when they get time to just be Buffy and Angel. It's really cute.
Yeah, it's adorable.
Brittany has feelings otherwise. And my, your favorite line.
You had two eggs sunny side up. I remember because they were wiggling at me like little boobs. Willow and Tara. And then Tara goes, sassy eggs.
That one cracked me up. Ha ha, but I'm ching.
I like it.
And Brittany.
My favorite line was from Spike, who says, well, what do you know, Biddy Buffy, when Dawn was, like, sassing him. So even though he's trying to get away from, you know, Buffy, the egg does, or the apple, you guys have eggs in my head. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
The egg didn't drop far from the hen.
Something like that.
Something like that.
That got weird.
I like Spike's nicknames for Dawn. I like him. And Kristen.
Mine comes from Anya, and it's from the scene with Anya and Xander. They're, like, just finished with sex. And Anya says, breathe. You're turning colors. I'm not ready to make life with you. But I could. We could. Life could come out of love and are smushing, and that's beautiful. It all makes me feel like we're part of something bigger. Like I'm more awake somehow, you know? We didn't really talk about this scene at all, but I love that Anya, she always starts off in the weirdest, most awkward way and ends up being so wise in the moment. Like, the way she started this conversation, I was as, like, taken aback as Xander, like, wait, what the hell are you talking about? And then by the end, like, she's just so wise and all-knowing, and it's beautiful. And, oh, Anya, I do love you.
I love how softly she says it.
Mm-hmm. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty common reaction to death, too.
Don't want to get it on?
Mm-hmm. Like, that seems pretty common from what I've seen. So let's move on to something a little more lighthearted with Angel, which who knew that Angel would be bringing the levity for once? But for 217.
Who knew? Have you been watching Angel? It's so great. It's hilarious.
The last, yeah, like, three episodes have made me very mad, though.
I was going to say, the last several weeks have been real laugh riots.
But they've been so good.
But not sunshiny and full of harmony. Haha. All right. So our synopsis for this episode. In this episode, Harmony tries to fight her evil nature by hanging out with Cordy. When a vampire pyramid scheme takes over town, Harmony is almost of use to bring down the evil group. However, she turns on Angel Investigations and barely escapes Cordy's wrath with her undead life. So, we have Angel is working to make amends with the team now that he's back and he is working for them. He's not the boss anymore. And Wesley is the boss, and he's trying to get Angel to, like, integrate into the group more, and he encourages him to go talk to Cordy, and she tells them they're not friends, and I was very sad. And so how do we feel about Angel's attempt to reintegrate into his friend group?
Atonement's a bitch.
Ugh, it's so sad because Cordelia is so angry. And Wesley, I think, is trying to bury how excited he is to have Angel back, but he's not doing such a good job of it because he's, like, trying to be Mr. Bossman and in charge. And also, like, he seems on a little bit better terms with Angel than Cordy is, which makes sense because they had a little bit more time to have a heart-to-heart last week. But just watching Wesley try to step into this boss man role is hilarious. and Angel sitting there, and he's like, is this torture for you? And he's like, yes. And Wesley's like, well, good. And he, like, keeps going and, like, kicks him out of the office, and watching poor, sad Angel trying to make up with Cordelia was so beautiful, and, oh, it just melted my heart.
I think it was at the end of the last episode, the one before this, that after the episode, I looked at Karen and I was like, you know, I can see Cordy, like, running him ragged. Like, Angel, you're going to go do this. And, like, all the stuff Cordy doesn't want to do, Angel is stuck doing, like, digging through books, looking for things, and, like, just basically making him her bitch for a while until he earns his place back in her heart. And you kind of started the episode with a touch of that. Like, you're going to make the coffee, and you're going to sit in, you know, in your little office, quote unquote, and, you know, do our bidding. And I think it was good for Angel to have to earn his way back. I like it. I like that it wasn't just, we know you were being an idiot for a reason and we're happy to have you back. Like, he needs to kind of earn his way back into their hearts.
Yeah, and Wesley's not exactly letting him off the hook either. Like, yeah, he told him to get his coffee order, and then when, after Cordy had her vision, and Angel was like, oh, yeah, are you okay? You just stay here, you know, get Chinese food and relax. Like, he keeps, like, calling out more and more suggestions to, like, make her comfortable as he's leaving the door, and he's like, the Chinese food thing killed me. He's like, oh, I don't order Chinese. Like, you know, he just feels, he doesn't know what, he's, like, an over-talker, and Cordy points that out to him. She's like, if you're just going to stand here babbling, like, I can't take that. And it's just so funny watching their reactions. But then Wesley getting, you know, angry too, being like, okay, well, where are you? Like, you're not giving me any flowers and you're not sending me to bed early. Or, like, you know, like, he's like, don't forget, like, she's not the only person who you hurt. Like, you're still working your way back in with all of us, not just her.
It makes sense that Cordy would feel the most betrayed, though, because she's been with him the longest since they've been in L.A. She was with them when it was him, Cordy, and Doyle. So it's kind of the biggest betrayal to her.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, it definitely makes sense.
Though I will say I noticed, like, you know, Wesley is being the boss, and Angel's working very hard to, like, let him give the directions, like, when they go after the guys in the robes. But once the fighting started, like, they fell into the old routine of, like, Angel. Like, I noticed he specifically, like, told Wesley to go, like, free the captives. Like, he kind of, like, and no one really even questions it. Like, that, like, listen to Angel. He knows what he's doing in a fight. So it's, like, old habits don't entirely die hard.
Well, and I thought in that moment especially, like, Wesley seemed kind of, like, lost. Like, I want to lead, but I don't know what to do. And Angel just, you know, steps in to give him help where he needs it. And I thought that was a nice little touch.
Yeah, he steps up, but then is happy still to, like, take the step back once things calm down.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wasn't trying to say he was, like, overstepping. I just thought it was interesting that he, you know, they're still listening to him, which seems to, like, indicate, like, he'll find his way back to leading them at some point, since even now they're still taking his orders to a degree in the middle of a fight, at least. So how did the newbies feel seeing Harmony show up?
She's, like, even more insufferable with Cordelia than she was with Spike, which I didn't think was possible, but it was. I was hoping that Angel would stake her by the end of the episode, or that Cordy would, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I mean, it makes some sense that if Harmony is running away, like, trying to get out of Sunnydale, that she would go visit her friend Cordy. But, you know, I kind of forgot that they were friends until she showed up and they, like, screamed. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, it works. But, yeah, Harmony's annoying and God, just somebody stake her already.
Yeah, but it does, like, there's a point in the doc that says that it was nice to see her interacting with women, and I think that's a great point, because Cordelia doesn't have that outlet anymore to, like, you know, paint your nails or just, like, do the stuff that she liked doing before, like, her job became this very isolating profession, and she's only hanging out with Gunn and Wesley and Angel. And, you know, when Wesley goes off on Cordy, or no, I'm sorry, on Angel in the last episode, he's like, "You're not paying attention. Do you see how lonely she is? Like, she's pulling herself away." And that's something that's been going on, even, I mean, especially as Angel was, you know, going off and doing his own thing. But there's no real outlet for Cordelia to be Cordelia, and I think she's sort of refiguring out who she is. But that moment, those moments with Harmony, were a reminder of, oh right, like, life doesn't have to be all dark and gloomy. Like, I can sit on my couch and enjoy a glass of wine with a friend and talk about the good old days and, you know, boy crushes and people who made up songs about me at one point in my life. So it was nice to see her doing that, but also incredibly sad because, you know, once Harmony goes away, she doesn't have that anymore.
How about you, Mai? How would you feel about seeing Harmony?
I like their dynamic, and she'd be fun if she wasn't so, I don't want to say silly, but she's a bit silly and also soulless and a vampire. But I want Cordelia to have some girlfriends, some non-dudes to hang out with.
And we know that that's not coming from Kate either, because
I was going to say, and I can't see Kate and Cordy being friends anytime soon.
I do think it's worth, like, the juxtaposition of, like, seeing Cordelia hanging out with Harmony. And Harmony is really, like, not that different as a vampire as she was as a human. Like, yeah. She doesn't seem to have changed her personality very much. It really shows us how far Cordelia has come since she was friends with Harmony in high school. Like, my God, she is such a different woman now.
The whole air pockets speech is... Yeah. Cordy is amazing.
I love her.
So much.
But it's really, like, a real stark, very noticeable when you put, like, her former life next to her present life to just see how much she has changed.
Yeah, the biggest change with Harmony is her wardrobe.
Yeah, and Cordelia just seems so much more comfortable in her own skin now, like, that she's found that purpose that is filling her air bubbles. And it suits her. She just is good as she is right now. Like, love her right now. And it's just such a stark comparison to put her right next to Harmony.
Yeah. Who is
still basically in high school.
And Cordy wasn't, like, chosen. She went out and chose it.
Yeah, that's very true. She has made the conscious choices to be where she is. We end up having, like, Harmony, like, follows Cordelia around for the episode, and Lauren, they have her sing a really horrific song, Candle in the Wind, at the karaoke bar, and Lauren says, like, her path is basically to, she just needs to keep following Cordelia around, which Cordelia is very clearly thrilled with, and so is everybody else on the team. But how did we feel about, like, this whole interaction between Harmony and everyone at Angel Investigations and how that was going? It was played for a ton of humor, which has been sorely lacking in the last several episodes.
Yeah, I loved how annoyed Wesley was.
Yeah.
Like, loved it. It was nice to see him, like, really annoyed with somebody else. Yeah, like, just, and the gum popping and the, just him losing his cool.
Somebody stake her.
Yeah, I was definitely on board for something to break the tension, and, you know, you can always count on Harmony.
Oh, and Gunn, we don't kill them anymore? We're going to kill this one. I love him. He's amazing.
And Mitch brought up a point in the doc, was saying, was anyone hoping that Harmony would become a permanent member of the team?
No.
I was hoping that would be a resounding no.
She's fun in small doses.
Exactly.
Yeah. Even this was a little too much Harmony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot. Harmony is a lot.
She is a lot. But someone can probably handle her. That person is not me.
And it's not the guy at the head of the vampire pyramid scheme, because he eventually gets his head cut off. But before that point, we have this whole pyramid scheme of this guy who used to be a motivational speaker and was selling pyramid schemes and as a living person has brought that to being dead. And is so people are like, turn to keep one for food.
Like, I forgot how do you guys feel about this plot. I forgot everything about the pyramid scheme. And I can't believe this was a thing.
I loved it so much because every time I go on my Facebook, it's like just people posting about all the pyramid schemes that they're involved in and how life-changing they are, and I can't handle it anymore. If I get one more like message from a friend from high school who I haven't spoken to, didn't even speak to in high school, who is like, how are things going? Just checking in. And by the way, you should buy this thing. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. I can't handle it anymore. Yep. It's so annoying. Well, first of all, I just don't have the energy to keep in touch with people as is. So it's like, I just can't imagine having to like go out and talk people into that. But I love watching them on TV when I'm not interacting with them. So I thought this idea was hilarious, like, you know, bring two and recruit two people, but then you get a reward, which is you get to eat one of them. So it's like rewarding them for their efforts, whereas like online it's people like being promoted and being a different color makeup seller or being I can't. It was too real but also hilariously fake.
That mustache.
Oh, the mustache. The mustache reveal. I was like, I can't. I have to walk away from this. Like, I was cleaning my room while I was watching it, and I'm like, this is way too much for me to handle. That mustache is so intense.
Oh, God.
And also, we don't really see a lot of vampires with facial hair, so it was so alarming to see that.
Yeah. Agreed.
I always wonder how hair works with vampires, because, like, we know that a lot of them get haircuts, like, as like, especially, like, guys, those, like, popular hair. But, like, what if long hair comes back in style? Is it ever going to grow back? Or are they ever, like, do they get their hair pulled out in a fight and then just have a bald spot forever? That sure doesn't seem to be the case.
Oh, yeah. So if, like, Angel's
hair grew. Didn't it?
Well, it was long. I feel like it's been the same style since we started, though. I mean, David Boreanaz's hair grew, but I think they tried to keep it as close to what it was. Like, Spike's hair, first of all, I don't think it can grow because it's got so much product in it. But I feel like Angel's hair really hasn't changed that much. Yeah, it's changed very little. Like, it might be fuller in some...
I don't mean in present times. I mean between certain flashbacks.
Oh, like, did he cut it off and then grow it back?
Yeah. Maybe I'm misremembering.
I don't know.
When he was eating rats and...
I mean, hair is technically dead.
Yeah.
So maybe it still grows because it's technically dead. I don't know.
I mean, if he loses a fingernail, does it come back?
Well, see, this is what happened with Pushing Daisies. We thought too much about the science, and we got sidetracked and talked about that for 45 minutes.
I like the mythology.
It's just always something that, like, strikes me, because hairstyles change so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think about it. So I'm like, if that guy shaved off his mustache, could he grow it back?
Yeah, and vampires, like, they're alive for so long, they'd have to adapt, you know?
I think I remember, I don't know if it's Vampire Diaries or somewhere, but some other incarnation talked about vampires, like, ingesting a normal diet of blood. Like, it keeps their body functioning like it normally would. So, like, hair grows, skin cells regenerate, like, that sort of stuff. Like, it's not like their body just stops functioning altogether and they are just walking around because of the magic. Like, the blood helps keep them moving.
Yeah, that makes sense because Angel has had poles through his chest and he's not walking around with holes in his chest.
Right. Yeah, they heal something quickly.
So something has to, like, you know,
yeah,
grow. So I guess hair would also grow.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine.
Let's go with that. I like that question. Okay. So we also have, we have a little crossover in this episode, another one where Cordelia calls Willow and to ask about Harmony. And there's this whole mix up where, because Harmony sneaks into Cordelia's bedroom and Phantom Dennis wakes Cordelia up because Phantom Dennis, A plus roommate, love him. But Cordelia, like, it's phrased to make Cordelia assume that Harmony's a lesbian. Obviously, she's a vampire, and then Cordelia has a conversation with an actual lesbian about about Harmony. So Mitch was worried that it was a bit offensive, this whole thing. What do you guys think?
It was just being played for a laugh. Like, it literally was just the miscommunication trope, but being played for... This is, you know, like, it's just a matter of look at how differently you can take the situation based on what you know about Harmony. Like, Cordy knows Harmony as this girl, not as the vampire. So, of course, she's interpreting it a different way than anyone who knows that Harmony is a vampire. The situation's different. I didn't see any harm in it, but, you know, it is what it is. Like, it's craziness.
The big thing that bothered me in this whole scene was that they wouldn't let Willow say it out loud. It was, like, silenced, so you're just getting Cordy's reaction. And that was, like, super annoying to me.
You mean her explanation that she... Yeah,
and she's
okay.
Like, oh, well, good for you, or, like, whatever Cordelia says, but... That just stood out to me. I was like, wait, why? Like, I don't know. I thought that was weird.
Probably to emphasize how embarrassed she was.
Cordelia? Or Willow?
Yeah, Cordelia.
Yeah, but...
Cordelia.
Yeah. But
saying lesbo, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I still think you could have had...
Yeah, it wasn't good.
You could have heard Willow...
Yeah, see, these shows have had, like, a very mixed relationship with the censors in terms of same-sex representation. Like, Joss Whedon threatened to quit at one point if he couldn't show certain things with Willow and Tara. And they were like, no, don't do that. It's okay. So this might have been just, like, one of those things that the network was, like, step too far, and they're like, we'll just pick our battles.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, why
hard
fight,
to know.
Like, why fight the battle on Angel when it's a bigger battle on Buffy?
Yeah, maybe. Like, it just, like, this didn't seem like the... If it was a censor thing, maybe they didn't think this was the one worth fighting when they, like... went out of their way to get the first on-screen kiss in the body, like,
yeah.
So I don't know. I'm guessing it was a thing with the network sensors at the time. All right, so Angel spends a lot of this episode kind of like trying to like defer to Cordelia, hoping that'll like eventually get her back on his side. Eventually, he takes her aside and is like, Harmony's going to turn on you. She's not your friend. And Cordelia doesn't take well to that. He turns out to be right, because they have Harmony go into spy, and she decides to join this pyramid scheme. She's one of those people on Facebook. Like, she totally would be one of the people on Facebook falling for one of those pyramid schemes.
Definitely.
I can picture it now. And she turns on them and offers them up to the group. And so we end up with a fight. You've got Cordelia is fighting with Harmony, and Angel is ends up beheading the guy in charge, and Gunn and Wesley are fighting off guys, and they're freeing the hostages and everything. But Cordelia takes the upper hand with Harmony and very easily could have killed her, but lets her go. And Angel watches it, and she's not in the mood for an I told you so, so tells him not to say anything. So, what do we think? He was right. He pointedly doesn't say anything about it. Were you expecting Harmony to turn on them at some point?
Well, I feel like Harmony, yeah, she turned on them, but also she would be the person gullible enough to fall for the pyramid scheme mentality and easily get sucked up in that. And also just she saw an opportunity to, you know, be part of something, and she didn't ever really feel like she was part of their group, but, and maybe took the host's advice a little to, you know, literally being like, well, Cordelia led me here and this is where I'm supposed to be. So I think it was a great move on Cordelia's part to let her go, because I don't think Cordelia would have been able to deal with losing or killing someone that she knew personally, when she probably could have killed Angel when, you know, she thought that he was going to be Angelus. So by having Harmony live and trusting that she'll stay far away and maybe out of trouble enough to not get mixed up with Angel Investigations again, then it gives her a little bit of relief, and having Angel realize that she needed that to just exist for her and make it her thing and not bring the group into it was a nice moment. And I'm glad he is able to realize that. He's a very sensitive vampire when he wants to be.
I also liked that, like, we've seen Cordy talk about, like, staking Angelus again. Like, if Angelus shows up again, she'll be the one who drives stake their heart. Like, she's mentioned it a couple of times. There's a difference between, like, destroying your potentially evil friend and staking Harmony, who is a vampire, yes, but is, like, so spacey and, you know, silly about things that, like, you can almost just see, like, I understand why Cordy didn't stake her and just told her to get away. Like, how much of a threat is she really? She's not a good guy, but she's really not, like, evil either. Like, she's not really good at either side. So I totally expected her to let Harmony go in that instance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she did turn them over within 20 minutes with the intention of getting them all killed.
Yeah, but, like, that was more just, like, I can get in good with these people. I don't care. Yeah, let's do that. Like, I really don't think she thought it through at all. It was not an evil scheme on her part. It was just, sure, this is what I have to do? Sure, okay, let's do that. Like, she's not a thinker.
Not all evil is thinking. Like, I don't think you have to be an evil mastermind to be dangerous.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that she's dangerous. Because everyone pointed it out to her. But I think Cordelia just needed to have the faith that someone, you know, could go away and not turn against her. She's been dealing with that, obviously, for the past few weeks, with someone being close to her and feeling like they're her friend and then turning on them again, so.
Yeah, was definitely a slap in the face for her, kind of twice over. But things all work out in the end, because Angel buys Cordy a whole new wardrobe to make up for giving her clothes to the homeless. And that pretty much, like, puts him back in her good graces. And Wesley, not happy about it.
Oh, Wes. Maybe Wes just needs some new sweaters and then he'll feel better. Or a new leather jacket.
I was going to say, or a new Rogue Demon Hunter outfit.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that.
I mean, we haven't seen his motorcycle. Maybe he needs a new bike.
They're so cute, anyway. Angel and Cordelia forever. He's so happy that he made her happy.
That smile, damn it, that smile. Just it sitting here now, I'm grinning like a fool because it just, you can't help but smile. You just can't.
Cordy's laugh.
She's so happy and he's so happy that she's that happy. It just, oh, it's brilliant.
He made that happen.
And he knows it.
Mm-hmm. And despite Wesley telling him, you can't buy her off. Like, well, maybe you not. Can. But I can totally make things a lot better. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up. Like, how do we feel about that? Like, does it seem like a step back for her character for, like, all the seriousness we've seen from her to be won over so easily by new clothes?
No. Shows that he listened.
Yeah, I don't think it does. I think she's still going to give Angel a hard time for everything he put her through, but he knows that her not being able to go shopping and that is, it's just another step. It's him reaching out. And yeah, it made her really happy in the moment, but I'm sure she's still going to, you know, order him around a little bit and give him hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think she was on, like, she was feeling bad about not having her friend around, even though she at the top of the episode said, well, you know, we're not friends. I don't think she actually really meant that, but she misses her friend, and she's like felt a sudden urge of happiness. And like when they were in the middle of the battle, like everyone kind of was just like fell into old habits. And so here it was easy to just fall back into liking Angel for that moment. And I don't think that means that, like Kristen was saying, I don't think it means that it's completely all is forgiven and yay, whatever. But it's nice to see her happy for a moment because she hasn't really been happy for a while.
And apparently Angel has a really good taste in clothes.
Yeah. Who would have thought? He has such a like limited color palette of his own. I was surprised by how many colors he bought her.
Now, can't you like see him at the department store like with some like personal shopper lady helping him pick out clothes for Cordy? Like, I want that scene, damn it.
That would have been so good.
I'm kind of obsessed with the image that like he did it all himself.
You think he brought Anne?
No. I would like to imagine him doing it himself.
Oh.
I think it's funnier to imagine that he really is that stylish. He just doesn't do it for himself.
Can't you, like, see him walking rack to rack? Like, would Cordy wear this? No. Yeah, no. She wouldn't. No. Okay. Like, moving on. Just, like, going from rack to rack.
That fashion sense and that dancing. What a catch.
But he will come for your mother's funeral.
That he will.
All right. Any other final thoughts on this episode?
I stuck around through the credits because I thought we might get a fashion show, but we didn't.
Oh, dang it.
That's disappointing.
It was such a lighthearted episode. I was like, well, maybe there'll be some post-credits stuff. But there wasn't.
Alas. All right, well, let's move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines. My favorite scene was Cordelia getting the upper hand on Harmony, just kind of showing how far she's come, and she looked pretty baller in that white jacket, and she's pulling the double crossbows. Like, I just thought she was totally badass. So, nice work, Cordelia. How about you, Mai?
Mine is Cordy getting the new clothes and hugging Angel, but yours is also those double crossbows, man.
It's true.
Yeah. It's an image.
It's a good image. Brittany?
Mine was the sadder Cordy Angel interaction where she's just mad at him for giving away her clothes, and but it spirals from there, being like, well, listen, like, you know, I'm mad at you for giving away my clothes, but I'm also mad that you went away and that you, you know, this whole time I thought you were turning back into Angelus and you were gonna sleep with Darla, which, you know, we all know he did, but and she still doesn't know that, so that's gonna come and bite them later on, because I have a feeling that's going to get out to the group.
His face.
Yeah.
When he says, like, I would never.
Yeah. Shifty eyes. I was like, well, that's coming back to bite you in the ass.
You're an excellent liar, Angel.
Yeah, but that whole scene I thought was great because it was over something so, like, superficial, but it allowed her to reveal everything else that's been really bothering her. So I thought that was a good moment for her. I mean, Wes had it last week with Angel in the car, and, you know, then Cordy got it this week with that. So,
and Kristen.
Well, I mean, my real favorite scene is just Angel smiling at the end because it just melts my cold heart. But I also really, really loved Harmony spilling her coffee on the computer and the whole thing like exploding. Like, she spilled it in the keyboard, and Karen and I are sitting there watching the scene. She spills it on the keyboard and then the computer explodes. And I went, that's not how that works. And Karen goes, nope, not at all. And it just, it was a nice little, like, what the hell moment in the middle of all of that.
Television seems to think that the keyboard is connected to the entire CPU.
I know. It's so annoying. Like,
it's the integral part. If you destroy the keyboard, everything else is doomed.
Mm-hmm. Or the monitor. It's either the keyboard or the monitor. No one ever goes for the CPU.
And yet, flames, yeah. Smoke, everything just
explodes. They must have had a Mac.
I mean, just good times.
Wasn't there a Mac at some point that was just a screen?
Yeah, there still is.
Yeah, there still is. But
in amazing colors or something.
The iMacs or whatever they call them now.
I don't know. I'm a PC girl.
All right. And let's move on to favorite lines. Mine was right after Harmony spills she spilled blood on the keyboard. And
yeah.
Wesley's like, get her out of here. And so Cordelia goes, come on, Harm. And Wesley goes, such a fitting nickname. Which is kind of the parallel to earlier when the host is like, you know, she needs to rethink her name, Harmony, from the singing. So everyone's beating up on Harmony. Mai, your favorite line.
I have two. And the first one is Cordy going, Sunnydale is that far away that you couldn't afford a little phone call, because we're always talking about how they don't communicate with each other. And also, I love how Harmony, I don't want to stay alone here with the ghost. Like, she's afraid of Dennis.
She should be. Dennis is looking out for Cordelia.
He is a pretty great roommate.
Love it. Brittany.
Mine was when Angel and Wesley barge into Cordelia's apartment and are like threatening to kill Harmony, and Cordelia's like, so you thought you just bust into my house and kill my friend without giving her a chance to explain herself? And Wesley's like, yeah. And Angel's pretty much, and then Wesley's like, that was our plan. Like, they really didn't like think it through. They're just like, Cordelia's in trouble, Wesley and Angel to the rescue. And then I also liked in that moment when Angel starts talking and, like, you know, oh, vampires, they can't be trusted, like, they're all evil, and, like, Wesley, like, takes a step back and, like, aims his crossbow at Angel, and Angel's standing there, and he, like, puts his hand behind him and, like, lowers it.
Yep.
That was good.
Oh, the gang is back, guys.
Yeah.
There's some joy in the world again. And Kristen.
Mine was between Wesley and Gunn, and it's basically Gunn's, like, whole we kill vampires thing, but Wesley says about Harmony, it's all right to speak freely in front of her, she's a vampire, and Gunn says, don't we kill them anymore? Just, yeah, his insistence, like, we're gonna kill this one, right? We're killing these? Yeah, okay. It's, yeah, I love Gunn. Good guy, Gunn.
He's not wrong. They sure seem to be leaving a lot of vampires alive.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the Demon Fight Club thing. When they let everyone out.
Yeah, just let them free.
And then they realize that they let everyone out.
Yeah. Just kind of everyone, oh.
That could come back and bite us at some point. Like, that could have bad consequences.
Good times. All right, well, that wraps up our discussion of Buffy and Angel for the week. If you guys want to comment on the episodes or our discussion of the episodes, just a reminder of our contact information. You can send us an email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com. You can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And iTunes reviews. If you leave us iTunes reviews, it helps other fans find the show, which is awesome. And if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will paint your toenails and not eat you, which sounds like a pretty great incentive to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so listener feedback for this week. We got some tweets and an email. So, Kristen, you want to take that first one?
Sure. Stephanie Merrill at Smerily, it looks like. Buffy's security blanket was the phone. She cradled it to her chest the whole time and didn't put it down when Giles hugged her. Yeah, she just kind of held on tight. I don't blame her. You don't think, you know, like when during stuff like that, situations like that, like you're not thinking about it, so Yeah, the phone? Okay, yeah, the phone. I've got it. I'm going to hold on to it. And yeah. Oh, Buffy.
My heart hurts all over again.
Yeah.
I watched the episode yesterday and I had to take a break halfway through. it was rough. Brittany and Mai, you want to get the next two?
Sure. So the first one's from David Raynard at Rabid Raynard, and he was talking with Natalie and Karen to say, started Teen Wolf / Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. I know nothing except from Rewatchable, so I know this Derek Hale is important. That's probably true. I know nothing about Teen Wolf. And when you get to the episode of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, where I am on and talking about how little I know about Not Another Teen Wolf, I hope you enjoy it, because I know nothing at all. Except there's someone named Styles. Still cannot point him out of a lineup.
Styles is great.
We'll fix that. That's really
all you need. Oh, no, it doesn't need to be fixed. I'm perfectly content.
It needs to be fixed. And the next is from Alejandro Claro at aClaro15. Why was Spike able to drink from a human on Crush? Or did Drew kill her and he just fed? Did I miss something?
Yeah, she snapped the girl's neck and then threw her at Spike.
I was going to say, I think they made a point in the episode like to say that he couldn't hurt someone. And so Drew did it and then he drank because he didn't hurt them. Mm-hmm. They were already dead. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they specifically had Drew snap her neck.
It's not like the Anne Rice or like Supernatural where dead people blood can hurt the vampires. So,
and she was so freshly dead that it probably didn't make a massive difference anyway.
Yeah, probably.
All right, and one more tweet from Laura Morrow at LauraMorrow123. So the unique fact about the body, this episode did not actually play the intro sequence. Joss thought it would kill the mood of the show. Yeah, they had, they put in that Christmas flashback to have while all the credits were going, so that when it was, they moved back to the Buffy stuff too, like with her mom, the credits themselves that were like starring Sarah Michelle Gellar and everything would not be on the screen as well. That was something.
That's really going, smart.
Yeah. So you didn't want anyone to get taken out of it with that. So that was the purpose of the inserting that Christmas scene. All right, and we also got an email from Jeremy. I'll just read this one. He says, a few facts about the episode Epiphany. It was deliberately scheduled to air after The Body to provide a contrast of emotions and feel good after watching both episodes back to back. Christian Kane grew up in Oklahoma, hence the license plate on Lindsay's truck. His character on The Librarians is from Oklahoma. And since the shows have left Netflix, I will watch the shows on my VHS recordings made when the shows originally aired. That's dedication.
That's like Lorelai, that's Lorelai Gilmore right there. That's digging out the old VHS tapes. The mad respect.
I still have Will and Grace videotaped on like VHSs from when my favorite reruns were airing.
That's awesome.
Some children will not know what VHS are.
I know.
I still taped Smallville episodes on VHS in college while I was in class so that I could watch them afterward. We didn't have DVR yet, but that was like, you know, 8 years ago now or something. So
I still don't have DVR.
I don't either. It's too expensive. And we're going to close the episode as usual with Brittany's brainstorms and Kristen's contemplations for Buffy 518 Intervention and Angel 218 Dead End. Take it away, guys.
I'm trying to figure out who will need the intervention on Buffy. Because I just I always think of the How I Met Your Mother, like people standing there with the banner intervention.
The like, intervention banner. Yeah. Yes.
Maybe Willow will get a British accent and they'll need to intervene and tell her to stop talking.
Yes! British accent. I love this plan.
That would be so amazing if they completely ripped that off of a Buffy episode and put it in How I Met Your Mother.
That would be amazing. I want this now.
Yeah.
I want this very badly.
I'm just going to be really disappointed when I actually watch this episode.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody who specifically is like due for an intervention. So well, I'm assuming it's something that happens in the episode that will, like...
Or just, like, Spike, because he's kind of still creepy. Like, even though he wasn't creepy for one episode, he's still kind of creepy. Maybe him and Dawn hanging out, they need to intervene and be like, okay, Dawn, like, you need new friends. Please stop hanging out with Spike.
It's time to go back and, you know, hang out with those people from your school. That seems like a better plan. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Dead end.
I'm hoping it's like a Monster of the Week episode where we don't have anybody from the old show coming back and we just sort of either have like... I don't have anything specific to go with dead end, but just a monster who comes in and then we get some karaoke because that seems to be the trend now. And then and at the end they're like, oh, it turns out that Wolfram and Hart was behind it and they're actually back in the picture and it's something we should be worried about again.
Yeah.
Because we do need and to Angel, bring that in the back.
And Angel buys Wesley that new motorcycle.
And everybody's still happy. I want everybody to still be happy.
That sounds good to me. Yeah, I can't. I would imagine Monster of the Week's probably a good way to go in predicting that because they kind of need that. They need to. This was a way to start back to teamwork, but they need to get there now. So
yeah, and they need to. They need to reintroduce what's actually going on this season, with you know, Angel being a part of this apocalypse thing and getting back into Wolfram and Hart and what's going on with Darla and all that stuff. So they can probably build that side story or that B story while giving Angel and Wesley and Cordelia and Gunn a little A story to take care of.
Either that or Cordy finds out that Angel did sleep with Darla and she kills him. Dead end.
Well, yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it.
The show hit its dead end. Psych.
Just kidding. That this is it.
And then actually, the next four seasons or three and a half seasons are just Spike taking over the show, Angel, because he's still on that picture when they advertise the show. Oh, well, not anymore because Netflix is gone, but.
That's funny. Yeah, it's possible.
All right. Well, we will see what happens and if those predictions come true. We will be back next week with discussions about those episodes. And until next time, my name is Caitlin.
I'm Mike.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Kristen.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
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 I'm sorry, I've been on mute for a while. We just scored 2 goals and I've been cheering like mad. But yeah, Harmony.